Thanks once again, Mr. Nias. And if there's any new people that are connecting on the Cybercast, a greeting to all of them. Some do connect only for the last part of the services because, of course, the announcements and sometimes don't always affect just everybody that's on there. As I mentioned to you very freely, I do plagiarize people who've got good minds and put words together very nicely in expressions or in poetry. And an author by the name of William Bennett wrote, "Much of life is a moral and spiritual journey. And it makes no sense to send young people on this journey, having offered them only some timid, vacillating opinions about proper conduct. We must give children better equipment than that. We must offer them unequivocal, reliable standards, reliable standards of right and wrong, noble and base, just and unjust. We must treat life as a moral endeavor." Well, that's a whole mouthful, to give young people standards and to have standards for ourselves that are reliable, that are strong, an understanding of right and wrong that is clear, an understanding of noble and base that is clear, an understanding of just and unjust which is clear. And then the final statement or understanding of this statement is these words outline the dilemma in our society today, certainly in Canada. And in the Western nations, there is a huge dilemma of standards. What is right and what is wrong? Who is to say and who is to know? What makes you right? What makes your idea better than mine? And people use arguments like that. You'll hear various kinds of comments, actually, about people who maybe do think that they have a firm position. People will make comments like, well, as long as they're consenting adults, then it doesn't matter what they do. People will say everyone has the right to worship as they please. You know, when you first hear something like that, you think, well, it's all right. But what if somebody believes in human sacrifices? Do they have the right to worship as they please? With your child, for example? Obviously not. I've heard over the radio on a program, Ontario is going to get all the tourist business because of same-sex marriages if we don't give in here in Alberta. Families are going to go fly over there to Ontario, you know, the couple that's going to get married, the families will fly over with them all if we don't give in here in Alberta. Actually, a popular talk show host said that. We know he's going to offend or re-offend, even though we're turning him loose. And you know that from criminals who are sent out, and they're right on the newspapers. It says, guaranteed to re-offend. Can you believe that? And you know, if he was to re-offend with someone in your family, and you took a baseball bat to him to prevent him from reoffending any further, you'd be in jail. It's amazing. You can't even defend yourself in our country anymore. Our values have shifted so badly. There's a well-known actress who said, losing my virginity was a career move. Those are the standards that people are living by. Bill Smith and Ralph Klein are a cake and not it with the times. Get with the times, these two, our mayor and prime minister. Why? Because our mayor opposed gay pride or gay parades. And of course, Edmonton has to have it now. It's going to be forced. But the thing is that if you're going to give in to a minority group like that, then we should have Chinese Day parades, Vietnamese Day parades, West Indies Day parades, and it's fine, all of those things. But somewhere along the line, you can see the lines need to be drawn, but you cannot be against what is considered to be morally right by whoever draws the lines. It certainly isn't the majority of people who make these decisions. But they're made for us in a way, and we have to go along with it. A little bit of marijuana will not hurt you, you'll hear said. It's good for medicinal purposes. And so our society, our world, yours and mine, is in a position where our standards are slipping. Our standards are watered down and weakened so that no one will say strongly and firmly, that's wrong any longer. If it doesn't hurt anybody, it's all right. It may be wrong for him, but it's not wrong for him. And all these various arguments that have been used by sometimes intelligent people, and in short, our standards have almost sunk out of sight and been replaced with everyone doing what is right in their own eyes. And the interesting thing is that's not the first time that that's happened. The Bible talks of Israel doing that more than once, where society got to the point where everyone drew their own set of standards, their own code. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And that is a very slippery slope. And it's that slippery slope that Canada is now traveling on, and the United States, and Great Britain, and other nations of this world. Unbelievable changes have taken place. Unbelievable changes have taken place in the last 30 years. There's great population growth, for example, migrations of people with different religions, interlaced trade and financial global picture. You know, recently, just the other day, Japan made an announcement. They're banning United States and Canadian beef because they figure the United States is tied together with Canada, and the mad cow problem here is their problem as well. And so Japan has banned the import of United States and Canadian beef. It has shaken the beef industry right to the roots because we're so interconnected now globally that what one nation does affects the other nation. Years ago, you'd go to war over these things, because, of course, the economy of the nation is being threatened. Communications by computers is worldwide. That's a good thing in many ways. We can be speaking here, and people in other parts of the world can tune in and listen, or they can pick up a sermon later on if they would like to. They can store it. We store ours in our archives. They can pick them up a little bit later on. So all of these things are occurring. Moral standards have fallen drastically, though, in leading industrial, it seems, wealthy, and the most powerful nations on the earth. Those seem to be amongst the leaders. Canada was the third nation in the world of 160, whatever it is, nations that has accepted, seemingly at least, accepted same-sex marriages. Three nations out of the whole world. And Canada's leading the rush down that way, along with two other highly industrialized and wealthy nations. Valerie sent me a little note from the Daily Telegraph in England to show you some of the changes that are taking place right now in England. And England is the home of Ephraim, the name of Israel, on Ephraim and Manasseh, which we believe to be the founding nations of Israel. So the same old, everyone does what's right in their own eyes. It's interesting that over the last 100 or 200 years, the major enemies of Britain in the past, the major wars that were fought where millions of British men died, millions of Israelites died, the major battles were fought against either France or Germany, and mostly Germany, but either France or Germany. The European Union at the moment is dominated by France and Germany, and Britain has sort of backed out, and they're on the edge. But things are changing very rapidly. And the citizens don't realize that, because all of a sudden, you know, it's sort of like the frog you put into cold water, and the frog is happy enough to be there. You put the flame on underneath it, and slowly that water heats up, and the frog doesn't leave the pot until it's too late, and then it can't leave the pot. That sort of seems to be happening in society. Someone makes the decisions, and the nice people don't complain about it. But there's an article in the Daily Telegraph called Bye Bye Britain. Bye Bye Britain. Bye Bye the values upon which the nation was founded, and the influence that nation has had as that kind of a law-abiding, law-creating nation on the face of the earth. There's a summary here which appears in the newspaper in Great Britain. This is the newspaper that actually summarizes these points. Look at the number of areas in which the EU jurisdiction is specified. Here's where the jurisdiction now falls over to the European Union. It will tell Great Britain what to do in these various areas: economic policy, employment, foreign affairs, defense, monetary policy, trade, agriculture, fisheries, competition, transport, energy, immigration, social policies, and consumer protection. 3 weeks ago, this newspaper said, we warned that the only Whitehall ministry left wholly in control of its own affairs would be the Department of Health. It's the only one that's not going to be told what to do by other standards. It's just different standards. New standards have come in. Different standards are coming along. Now, even this claim seems over-optimistic, because public health, having been inclined in an area where Brussels will have jurisdiction, so some tidying up exercise. Another little portion of the article says, this is it, the moment we have repeatedly been told would never come about. 47 years ago, when the Treaty of Rome was signed, the European Union is ceasing to be an association of states, which is what it initially was, an association of states. And it's becoming a state in its own right. That is to say, one unified state. In fact, it is adopting more prescriptive and intrusive constitutions than virtually any nation on earth. National constitutions do not generally concern themselves with such minutiae of public life as employment rights, the status of the disabled, or space exploration. But under the proposed dispensation, the member nations, that would be all the nations of the European Union, and that's now just beginning to jump, because many of the Eastern Bloc nations are now joining. Poland, I think, is recently in there now. Czechoslovakia, at least the Czech Republic, is about to come in, and it's just beginning to grow. I think 12 more are being united to that group. Under the proposed dispensation, which covers all of Europe now, or will soon cover all of Europe, the member nations, and this got me a little bit, the member nations will have substantially less autonomy than, say, individual states of the United States. So in other words, England will have less autonomy than Montana has. Montana has enough autonomy within the United States, or California, or Florida, to make certain regulations and laws. But the member nations of Europe will not have that. That's going to change. All those standards will be then changed. And it is interesting that the changes are dictated by those who were former enemies of Israel. It isn't that suddenly people have begun to love each other. That's not the case. Now, it's right on the hour by my wristwatch, and I said right on the hour I would say hello to Anna in Deutschland. So, Anna, wenn du bist da, ein schönes Gruß von uns in Kanada. I'm not sure if she heard that or not, but hopefully she did. If she's listening, she would have heard that. She's going to send me an email to see if she did. I'll let you know. Israel has been blessed, unbelievably blessed. It is astonishing to think that of this nation, of this world of 6.5 billion people, only a few hundreds of millions possess 90% of the wealth. The progress is being made there, and all that's going on in health and so on and so forth within a very small group. And most nations on this earth look at and regard what was the British Commonwealth and the United States as havens to come to. Canada and the United States for immigration and other places like Australia and New Zealand are considered to be marvelous places to live. It's peaceful there. It's progressive. You can get jobs. You can bring your family up in peace. There aren't any wars within those nations and so on. But that's a small portion of the world. And how has that portion of the world gotten to be that way? It was not totally an accident. A large part of it has to do with the fact that they're blessed, since they are the descendants of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Israel. They're blessed. But another reason is that they have this book within those lands, and this book has been the guideline, not perfectly followed, but a guideline for our nations. The laws that built the United States, the laws that dictated the Magna Carta and runs Canada, came from this book. The common law of Britain came from this book. Now those laws are being changed and challenged. And the standards then which were reached, which made this nation a great nation, and other nations, are being lowered. Many years ago, not very many years ago, 50 years ago, if you were a hard worker, you'd get a job. All you had to do is have a work ethic. And that work ethic is badly eroded today. People want coffee breaks, they want this, they want that, they want the other thing, and no one's happy with anything. And so the grumbling and complaining has continued to grow to the point that even if your company is going to be bankrupt, you still want to have more and more and more. And of course, I'm not saying that companies have always been perfect. There's times where companies needed to be hit over the nose with proper business ethics and so on. In the book of Matthew, chapter 24, there are some statements that Jesus Christ makes that are touching all of us today, that we will experience and live through, and have already done this. But he was asked about what was going to happen when the end time would be near. That is to say, when all of the deeds of mankind would go on to a point where this earth could no longer contain that. Because as we know, the Bible tells us that Christ will return to save mankind. He's going to return to save this world from itself. I just read in the Edmonton Journal, I think it was last week even, a scientist stating that by the year, I think he said 2012, or 2020, not far from now, and he's looking forward to the possibility of a total disaster on the face of the earth. Other people will say, well, 2020. But we're talking in a range of two decades. You think back 20 years ago, that wasn't very long ago. You know, we, the church that I became a part of in Edmonton here began in 1964. And that was, it seems like yesterday. I remember very clearly when the Strathairns and myself were at church services with so many others that were there. I think, were you there, Joe, at the time? And Lynn, not quite. Came a little bit later. But, you know, there was some that was somewhere there at the very beginning. It seemed like yesterday. The Schaefers were there, I remember. And, you know, the years went by. And, of course, my kids and my family, the Knuts. And it was a wonderful thing. But that's been 38 years now, or longer. If we've got only 18 years left by someone's estimate, or 15 years, it gets kind of nervous. Gets you kind of nervous. Why is that all happening, and what is actually going on? Here's what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 24. Beginning in verse 10, he starts off by saying, many will be offended and will betray one another and will hate one another. So the first part that's going to sort of hit people is this attitude. It's in your mind of being suspicious of people and disliking and distrustful and hating and being offended. A lot of that has to do with how you think about yourself and how you think of others. So there's attitudes. We've always understood that Satan broadcasts in attitudes and wavelengths. And so these attitudes of distrust and hatred will be mounting on the earth, he says. And many false prophets will rise and deceive many. It doesn't mean there will not be religion. There'll be a lot of religion. And I'm convinced there'll be more and more religion as time passes. But it'll be false teachings and false doctrines. And that's why it's important that we focus on the Word of God. That's the only guidebook there is on the face of the earth, which is authentic. And we need to focus in on that book and live by it. And be sure, the title of this sermon, High Standards. Be sure that our standards are high and that we hold them up. And that we maintain those standards. In verse 12 it says, because lawlessness will abound, and the love of many will grow cold. What is lawlessness? It is a lowering of the standards, a lowering of the understanding of how you conduct and act in the society. Lawlessness means you begin doing things that are okay for me, as long as I haven't hurt anybody. And whatever people will say, to allow themselves to make choices that will gratify themselves. In verse 13, Jesus said, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. And so there is a requirement on God's people to bite the bullet, to just hang on, to endure. And that means we'll be living in difficult times and having to hold on tight. Sometimes wondering if God hears our prayers. Sometimes wondering why everything seems to be going wrong. And we have not yet, I have not yet, had to go and live in a cave somewhere with sheepskins covering me up, you know, and looking around for food somewhere. But some of God's people have done that, if you read Hebrews 11. I wonder what we would think if that ever happened to be us at any given time. Then he goes on to say in verse 14, the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. And then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let he who is on the housetop not go down or take anything out of his house. When you read these words of Jesus Christ about the end time, it is of interest, and it was of great interest to me, that he quoted the book of Daniel. He quoted what Daniel experienced. First of all, that should teach us that the book of Daniel has to do with prophecies of events that were after the life and death of Jesus Christ. So Daniel, who lived hundreds of years before Christ, prophesied, and his prophecies were not even for then, although things did happen, as Daniel said. Jesus said his prophecies have to do with the future. It's an interesting kind of a thought pattern. Let's have a look at 1 Corinthians, since we're in the New Testament now. We'll go to Daniel in a moment. But 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and we can have a little idea as Paul is beginning to say some things. And I want to go to the book of Daniel to show you how the prophecies of Daniel parallel what Jesus Christ just said, what we just read. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, this is what Paul was saying about the nations of Israel. He says, all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Interesting statement. So the Israelites of old, Daniel included, the Israelites of old knew what was, what became the Christ and his standards. The rock gave them their standards, and they lived by those standards to some extent. But with most of them, it says God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. He was not pleased because they did not uphold the standards that Daniel had given them, that Moses had given them, that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had given them. They did not uphold the standards which God gave to mankind to live by. Now, we can call those laws, we can call those commandments, we can call them standards which God expects of you and of me. He says, now these things became our examples. And now he's talking here to you and me, converted people. What happened to Israel is your example and mine, the upholding of these standards, because he goes on saying, our examples to the intent, for the purpose, that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we need to have high standards. We need to fight against that which in any way breaks the laws and commandments of God. And coveting and lusting, that's one of the commandments. That's the 10th commandment. So he's saying that very clearly. Paul is writing this years later. It's amazing how all of a sudden theologians are beginning to say, oh, hold it, Paul didn't really mean to do away with the commandments. Wow. So it's amazing you came to that conclusion finally after you read these words that he says here. We're not supposed to lust. That's the 10th commandment. We're supposed to control ourselves. We're supposed to reach high standards amongst God's people. You know, sexual immorality, for example, ought not to be named, but not to be occurring amongst us. There ought to be an effort, you know, not to mumble and grumble with each other or against each other or criticize or try to shoot each other down, try to make you elevate yourself and make others feel worse. That ought not to occur amongst God's people. It does occur because we are half-baked, some of us, and we need to be a bit more fully baked in that oven. Going on a bit further, he says in verse 7, do not become idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, these people sat down to eat and drank and drink and rose up to play. That details our society today. Fun, fun, fun. You know, they have the break at the end of university, or I think it's the spring break, and the beaches in Florida and California become nothing but places for drunkenness and sex orgies you wouldn't believe. It's amazing. And everybody looks forward to this great time. Young people from England flock to Bermuda and places like that, the same kind of a situation occurring and happening. And the venereal disease they bring back is horrendous. And various things like that. So they sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day 23,000 died. So what Paul is saying is keep our standards up. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted. We just finished reading that Christ was the rock. They tempted him, and they were destroyed by serpents. God doesn't allow standards, his standards, to be lowered. His standards are set, they're high, they're fixed, and you and I need to reach up to those standards. And so we do need to seriously consider what it is that God has in mind for all of us. He goes on saying in verse 10, not to complain. Now, we're good at complaining, aren't we? And we don't seem to think there's anything wrong with it. It's not a sin. The Bible doesn't say, thou shalt not complain. But he speaks very, very strongly about complaining. Don't complain as some of them complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. You mean God would destroy you because you're complaining? Well, you know, when a person complains, it does something to you. It does something to you inside. And you know, if you believe, you read something and hear enough garbage, pretty soon your mind can't sort out any longer what is good and what is bad, what is garbage, what is not. And so standards are eroded. We need to go by this book. It says, do not complain. Doesn't mean you should not point out something which needs improvement. Of course not. You know, that's called constructive criticism. That's always welcome. It's a destructive kind that nobody wants. But constructive is always welcome. And in verse 11 it says, now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. And you and I can say that much more clearly than Paul could have 2,000 years ago. Paul looked around him 2,000 years ago and thought the whole world's going to end. Well, we look around ourselves and we know that humans will kill themselves. Now we know they can. Paul didn't even know how large the world was or how the world functioned. Part of the concept I want to bring you to today is that we do live in Satan's world, and we're influenced by that world in our schools, in our businesses, in our jobs, in the laws of the land, in the things we can say and things we cannot say. You know, all of that has a bearing upon us. The mayor of Edmonton cannot let his personal opinion have anything to do with what he has to do as an official. He simply can't do that. They won't let him. So you better, you know, succumb to those laws, or else other things will happen. There are more people of God in the past who lived in really pagan societies. We don't live in a truly pagan society, but some lived in really pagan societies where all kinds of false gods were worshipped and all kinds of things that were done that were kind of horrendous. But they were successful people, and they were able to live wonderful lives, successful lives, lives that God could bless. You know, I've said in the past, God doesn't bless stupidity. Now, he might make allowances here and there, provided we don't keep it up. No, he doesn't bless stupidity. He doesn't bless mistakes and errors. If he did, then all kinds of things would be able to be done which were wrong. The Challenger, which crashed and killed 7 people, crashed because of human carelessness and misjudgments and errors. They knew, for example, that foam struck the left wing of the Challenger. And I spoke to, I don't know how I happened to do this, but I spoke to, when Rick and Heather and Val and I were on this Mediterranean cruise, the safety expert, a Jewish man from Russia, Kiev, who works as a safety expert for the flight department of the United States and knows all about the Challenger situation. He said to me right away, they could have rescued those people. They could have set up another Challenger shuttle, picked the 7 of them off of that Challenger, and then just let it go. If they would have just checked the wing, they'd have seen that the tiles had been knocked off. They could have rescued them. But, of course, they were looking at a $20 billion spaceship, which would have been finished then, too. And so the decision was made, well, that foam couldn't have hurt it. Nobody looked. Nobody checked. And so the disaster then was allowed. Because of carelessness, because of standards which were lowered. You know, in 1943, when I was a boy in the coal mining town of Lusker, everybody knew that the number one mine had gas in it. Everybody knew that. Which meant you don't take an open flame into that mine. They took little canaries in, which the gas got to be too much, the canary would die. But you didn't take any open flame into there. On a Friday, a Good Friday, when my dad didn't go to work, his partner, who was a Seventh-day Adventist, went to work that night. One of the bosses, just for a moment, got careless. Instead of having the standards being extremely high in safety, he got a little bit careless. And for some reason or another, took with him into the mine, a lantern which had an open flame. When you lit it, the flame was open. Miners all had little lights, but it was all little battery operated and so on. They knew that they had gas in there. And apparently this fellow, just wasn't thinking. His standard, maybe over the time, he got more and more careless, which people do when they drive cars. You know, when I used to be a driving instructor, I would tell people, if you have a near miss in an accident, you better, you know, polish up your driving, because you begin getting careless. He got a little bit careless, and the mine blew up and killed 7 people, including my father's partner. My dad would have died had he been there that night. Killed 7 men, and himself, of course, as well. All because he lit a lamp when he knew he shouldn't have, but he just didn't think about it. He got careless. And so people tend to get careless, and we ought to be very, very careful that we keep our standards high. We cannot be careless with the laws of God. You know, today is a Sabbath day. It's a holy day. It's holy time. And we need to treat it as the Sabbath and treat it as holy time. But that doesn't mean we're going to become Pharisaical, you know, and do things which would make the Sabbath a burden for mankind. But to honor and respect it is important. Now, Daniel was a captive, as I mentioned, in a pagan place. So let's go and have a look at his book. In the book of Daniel, in the first chapter, it talks a little bit about Daniel and some friends of his, teenagers these were, who were captured in about 605 BC and taken probably in chains to Babylon, put in prison. And it was found that they were very, very intelligent. And so the king, who was an intelligent king, said, I want all the brains. Send me all the brains. And so they sent him Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. They sent all his brains to him. In verse 3 of the book of Daniel, I'm just going to jump into a couple of verses here to get the gist of what I want to say. The king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. So Daniel, right off the bat, was a handsome young man. He was not, you know, somebody you wouldn't look at twice. He was a hunk, girls could say. A handsome young man. And so was Shadrach, Meshach. You know, they picked these men because they were handsome. We'll talk a little bit about Joseph later on. He was handsome too. It's an interesting thing. He was able to work within the king's palace, probably had training. As a matter of fact, the thinking is that Daniel was of royal descent and that he had training then in the king's household. No blemish, good looking, gifted in wisdom, and then he was supposed to learn. So they went and they began to learn. Now obviously, when verse 8 comes along, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Daniel had a very high standard of what he would eat and what he wouldn't eat. Where did he get the standard from? How did he learn about standards? Well, this book talks about clean and unclean foods all the way back to Noah. That's where he got his standards. His mother taught him, his father taught him, the rabbi taught him, or whoever it was. And Daniel, at the age of 16 or 17 or 18, his standards were solid. They were fixed. And he's a living proof that if you have standards that you believe in that are solid, you can grow up in a pagan society with pagan gods all over the place and not be stirred at all. You can go ahead and follow God. Daniel did. So did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Jumping down to verse 9 shows you what happened then. You see, because Daniel had these standards, because they were high standards, and because he wouldn't give in to those standards, he would not eat unclean food or whatever it was that he knew he shouldn't eat that the king wanted him to have. And so God brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. God brought him into it. See, God blesses those who keep those high standards. And Canada, the United States, had high work ethics, for example. That's a standard. They had a high moral standards for families. That's a standard. And that allowed this nation to be blessed, even though there are many areas in which Canada, the United States, and Great Britain fell far short. But there still are some very high standards. And it hasn't yet been knocked down completely. The chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, "I fear my lord the king who has appointed your food and drink. For why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king." He knew that he got his head cut off. But he also knew that the king wanted young people around him who looked good, who looked healthy. You know, people who brushed their teeth, combed their hair, and made sure they looked good. Daniel was one of them. So he said, and this eunuch knew that if you looked like you're going to fall over any time, the king would get rid of you. He'd just send you somewhere else. But so the Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had sent over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, the names were later changed, "Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink." So he says, "Give us 10 days and then have a look at us and see what we're looking like." That was smart. You know, for a 17-year-old with high standards, to say that was very, very smart. He kept working within the laws of God, within the standards of God. He was trying to find a way in which to continue obeying God and still be in the position that he was in. He says, "Then let our appearance be examined before you and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants." Now, he didn't say, if we look kind of wan and weak, then we'll go ahead and lower our standards and eat the food. Oh, no. No, he said, we're not going to eat that food. And if we look terrible, then you make your mind up what's going to happen. You know, because the eunuch had certain power to do. So the eunuch consented with them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. That was very wise of our young people. You know, we had a Bible study last night with our teenagers. I'm very encouraged with our teenagers. They're much smarter than I was when I was a teenager. I was dumb. Boy, I was 16 and a half, finished grade 11. I thought I knew about as much as I was to learn. Not much more. Why go to university? Yeah. you had to go sometimes to find out how much I didn't know. And we don't know. All of us, we can study all of our lives, we don't know lots of things. So he consented with them and to test him then 10 days later. And at the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter. Fatter, you got that word, by the way? In the flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. So the king kind of liked people to look, you know, as though they were well-fed and healthy and so on. And so the steward took away their portions of delicacies and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. For these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Do you know what they had to study in the libraries of Babylon, what they actually had to learn? It was Babylonian literature that they learned and studied, and God gave them the ability to remember all of this. They had to learn how to interpret various kinds of omens. They had to learn to interpret things by the stars, astrology. They had to know how to examine livers to see what you should or shouldn't do, go to war with the livers yellow or whatever it may be. The kidneys and the flight patterns of birds. They had to understand all that, because to these individuals, that had meaning, that had certain symbolic meaning. So they studied right along with the Babylonians and with others that were there, and they got better grades than the Babylonians did. So they must have studied, they must have had work ethics, work habits, the young people. And God doesn't just funnel knowledge into your brain. He helps, though, when a person has a standard and God wants you to do something. Then he will help. First thing he wants us to see, though, is that people uphold those standards. So that's a very important portion of it, then. To understand, then, a strong commitment to God and a proper understanding of his truth, if that's present in the minds of young people or older people, and if it remains, then an education in the universities of this world or in the tech schools of this world or wherever we may go to work, that education need not be corrupting. The workplace need not be corrupting. It depends on the individual and how high you hold your standards, how much you understand them, and how much you practice them. Now let's go a bit further and read some of the passages from the book of Daniel that Jesus Christ directly quoted. And it shows you how important Daniel was in the scheme of God's plan, where here 400 and some years before Jesus Christ, Daniel was making prophecies about the Medo-Persian Empire, and later on the Greek, Alexander the Great, and the Roman Empire, and all these things were being set up in advance by Daniel. I'll just take a few verses. Daniel chapter 9 and verse 7. O Lord, righteousness belongs to you, but to us shame of face, as it is this day, to the men of Judah, to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. This is Daniel 9 and verse 7. And all of Israel, those near and those far off in the countries to which you have driven them, because of the unfaithfulness which they have committed against you. And that's what Jesus was talking about. They turned away from God because of the unfaithfulness which they have committed against you. Chapter 11 and verse 33. There's more than these verses only. I'm only going to take these because of the sake of time and just to give you a little example. Daniel 11 and verse 33 says, and those of the people who understand shall instruct many, yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering, and when they fall they shall be aided with a little help, but many shall join with them by intrigue. So Jesus talked about false prophets and so on. Daniel wrote that all well in advance. And Jesus wrote that 400 years later again, that was to be continued and will continue. And some of those of understanding shall fall. You know, the Bible says that Christ will not return until there comes a great falling away. Well, what do you fall away from? You fall away from standards. You fall away from truth. You fall away from that which has been given to you. As I said, you know, before, you don't fall out of a tree until you've climbed the tree. You can't fall out of a tree if you're standing in the bottom of it. You've got to get up the tree a bit. Then you can fall out. So God gives his standards to individuals, to you and to me, to the church of God. He's given us standards. And we've embraced those standards. I rejoiced when I understood what the Bible said, that Jesus believed in that he did. And I tried then to live that way. And his standards became my standards. So I'm trying to reach those standards. I want to reach the higher standards, of course. You know, we can't be complacent and say, well, it's good enough. A lick and a promise isn't good enough. We always need to be improving and developing ourselves. That is certainly true. And when that commitment is strong, you know how we are as humans? If we have a strong commitment and we don't reinforce it from time to time, we tend to forget. And that's one of the main purposes of the holy days of God. Every year we go through the very plan of God, beginning with the holy days. It all starts with the 7 annual holy days. And if you begin to push them aside and can't be bothered and so on, then soon you begin losing the understanding, because our mind just covers it up with other things. And God takes His Holy Spirit, which is the precious key that He's given us to understand the Bible, from us. And then all of a sudden you're blind and don't even realize it. It's an amazing thing that occurs and happens to some. It shouldn't. But Daniel prophesied that was going to happen. And Jesus did the same. Chapter 12 and verse 11. Daniel said, "And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days." Now, there was an abomination of desolation set up by Antiochus Epiphanes after Daniel's time. But Jesus said that that was going to happen too. So Jesus was talking after that Antiochus Epiphanes was done with. Jesus was talking, so there is yet to come this abomination of desolation. And when that comes, then there'll be about 3.5 years left. We'll know that. You and I will understand it because others won't. We'll understand, not the day or the hour, but we'll understand the period of time that we are in. So these are passages from Daniel to show the grandeur that this young man was able to be to arrive at and to be used by God, because he held his standards high. Another young man was Joseph. We can look quickly into Joseph's story, chapter 39 of Genesis. And I hope that this becomes the standard, or the story, I should say, of all of our young people. I hope our young people keep their standards high, and that you and I as adults keep our standards high. Because when we ask ourselves, you know, what is it that gives young people a strength, a determination or understanding of what's right and what's wrong? What is it that does that? Where do they learn their standards from? It is from the Bible, of course, but it's through teachers of the Bible, primarily mother and father. And then the rabbi or the priest or the minister. And then the members of the church. We'll get into that in just a moment. But in Genesis 39, just a few verses here, verse 2 to 4, after Joseph was taken down, we'll go back to verse 1, I guess. Joseph was taken down to Egypt, and he was taken in chains as a slave, 17 years old or 16 years old. His life seemed to be going downhill in a big hurry, but Joseph never lost his standards, though he was in chains. Though he was being taken away and sold by his brothers and you know, betrayed, and all these horrible thoughts that must have gone through his mind. Bewilderment. I'm sure he wondered, does God hear me way down here wherever I am? I'm not even sure he knew he was in Egypt. But he was brought there, and then Potiphar, an officer of the Pharaoh, captain of the guards, an Egyptian, bought Joseph, purchased him, a slave from Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, why was the Lord with Joseph? Because Joseph had standards. They were God's standards. And he didn't compromise on those standards. He tried to live by these high standards. He fought to live by those standards. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and all that the Lord made, made all he did to prosper in his hand. And that the Lord made all that Joseph did to prosper in his hand. So this Potiphar realized, boy, I've got a real gem in this young man. He's smart, he's intelligent, he's honest, he works hard. You know, even Potiphar could see the high standards that Joseph had. And Potiphar, who was a pagan, Joseph grew up in slavery in his yard, Potiphar recognized these standards and said, you know, that man has got such high standards, I can give him everything. I can put everything under his control. And he did. Everything he had under Joseph's control. Later on, the Pharaoh did the same thing. Joseph found favor in his sight, verse 4, and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under Joseph's authority. And so then he goes on explaining in verse 6. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. He did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, a very good-looking young man, as our young people are in the church. You know, it's nice to look in a young person's eyes and see clear eyes and see some determination in their life and in their step. It's a wonderful thing to see. And I hope they never, ever lose that, because that's a great loss. But he could see that, and of course, the other thing happened in verse 7. It came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph And she said, lie with me. That would have been fornication, adultery, breaking God's laws and commandments, lust. And Joseph, at the pain of death, said no. He refused and said to his master's wife, look, and his high standards came into play. My master does not know what is with me in this house, and he's committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Sin against God. How can I tear down these standards that are God's standards, is what Joseph was saying, in other words. These standards that I have, thou shalt not, come from God. There's nothing I've dreamt up, Joseph said, nothing that somebody just sort of accidentally told me, you know, the late gambler at night or something like that. But this is from God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? 17 years old, and Joseph had these strong standards, the same ones that Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Daniel had, and were willing to die for, because they were God's standards. And Joseph understood that as well. And so you know the rest of the story then. We then, as converted adults, dare not to be unsure of what is right and wrong, or lighthearted about, oh well, a gay parade, let's go and see what the gay pride day, let's go and see what it's all about. No. We need to recognize evil. We need to explain to our children what's right and wrong in God's sight, from God's point of view. And we need to understand and not be pharisaical, mind you, about these standards. You know, the laws of God are not intended to make life miserable for us. They're intended to make life good. Living by those standards and those laws is the best possible way a human being can live. That's the only way you have peace of mind and you can sleep at night and have a beautiful, sweet dream, and a nice sleep at night. That's the way you can walk around in the daytime and greet people and be fresh and learn to go. That's the only way that your mind can be full of ideas that allow you to write good poetry and come up with thoughts and new ideas and new concepts, brainstorming and so on. You've got to have a good mind to do all of that. It's not fair to our children if we as adults neglect teaching them the benefit of living God's way. And how do we do that? One of the main things is by example. How do you live and how do I live? By example. It's very important. You know, you have people over, you go to the feast, you have to go out for dinner, you know. How much do you drink? Your children are there watching you. How much do you drink? Is one glass enough? Should be. We shouldn't have any more than one glass of wine. We shouldn't have a bottle of wine between two people. I've seen that in restaurants before. I don't know how people can do it. They go in for a meal in a restaurant, two people, and a bottle of wine in the middle of the table, and they finish it. I'd crawl out of the restaurant, I think, if I had that much. But a glass of wine is wonderful. You know, it's just fine. You know, but that builds character when you say, that's my standard. And I will not lower my standard. Or going to parties that are wild, you know, where you know there's party animals there. Why go? You're putting your life in danger when you do that. So our standards need to be kept. The example of the adults in the church is very important. And some adults have not set the best example in the way they talk. You know, how do you as a mom and dad talk about the minister when you're at home? Let's say, you know. How do you say about the minister? Say he talks too much? Talks too fast? I don't know. What do you say? What do you say about other people in the church? What do you say about your child's teacher in school? You know, when your child, did your child get support from you in the way that will help the child have a positive outlook? Or does the child get negatives from you? Does your child learn to mumble and grumble? Because mom and dad learns to mumble and grumble. How do we act as examples? What do we talk about when we have coffee afterwards here? You know, would we mind if everybody tuned in on that? Now, I know that sometimes there's things which are personal you're talking about, but you know, we should not be saying the kind of things that we would be afraid to repeat to somebody else. And we should not be running each other down. We should be building up one another. Because the fundamental beliefs of the very children and people of God is to love human beings. God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. And we're trying to be like him, like God. So the love of mankind, even the faulty ones, is important. Now, we don't love sin. We hate sin. But you don't hate the sinner. You pray for the sinner. You reach out to the sinner. You try to help the sinner by being an example. By word of mouth, that's another way that you teach individuals. When I put a sermon together, as I did this week, I have a question and answer section. This is for little children. question and answer page. It's a nice psychedelic colored one that I give for the children. This one's just white for myself. But all kinds of questions for children to answer. And I've got a little on the top. It says, remember, mom and dad can help. So I hope that the children will go back home to mom and dad and ask them, I don't know the answer to this question. Mr. Barrett's asking me a question. I've got here, for example, standards are the way that a person measures something he or she does or has. High standards would be that which is the best. An old wreck of a car would not be a high standard. Which of the following are high standards? Circle the answers. Well, if you're 4 years old, you may not be able to read that. But mom and dad can tell you about it. You know, I've got down 2 points. Work hard or be lazy. Do your homework or forget about it. Clean your room or leave a mess. You know, what are high standards? You see, you teach them in this way what high standards are. I try to do my part to teach them what high standards are. So by the taking time to explain, by discussing things that are happening in the world, your children need to know. They need to know that if there's going to be great Gay Pride Week in Edmonton, the standards of the city are dropping down. They need to know that if there's, you know, half of the marriages break up, and children are without mums and dads, they need to know that that's, or mums and dads are not mothers and fathers. I mean, you can be a father in the sense that you can beget a child without being a father. A father is someone who loves his child and works with a child and a mother and deals with a child and so on. Paul tells us, we can go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 again, to do the kind of things that Joseph did, and Daniel, and Meshach, and Abednego. You know what Joseph did when Potiphar's wife grabbed a hold of him? He ran. He just plain ran. It's not wrong to run. I think I was 11 years old the first time I ran. I went to Noel McVeigh's birthday party, and they were playing Spin the Bottle. And Albert and I, do you know what Spin the Bottle is? Some of the old folks do. You have you know, boys and girls in little circles, spin the bottle, and if it points that way, you go over and kiss that person. Albert and I weren't going to play. And Mrs. McVeigh said, if it spins your way, I'm coming. And sure enough, the first spin came to us. Albert and I were out that door. We ran down that street so fast and so far. They looked all over town to give us some birthday cake at least, you know, but we ran. That was the first time I ran. Anyway, Joseph ran because his standards would have been compromised. And he put his life on the line, as did Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel. For a young person to do that, it's amazing. And we need to think sometimes, here's these young people, teenagers still, 18, 19, and of course grew up older, did this in the midst of a pagan society of people who hated their guts, you could say in the vernacular. And yet they were successful. They were so bright and so brilliant, and God blessed that then on top of it. They blessed those standards. Our young people deserve that kind of teaching and guidance from us. Look what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18. He's talking now to those who are joined to the Lord in one spirit. In verse 17, if you're converted and baptized, you're joined to the Lord in one spirit. Flee sexual immorality. Run. Get out of there. Every sin that a man does is outside the body, but he who commits sexual immorality sins against his own body. And I'm here to tell you, abortion, fornication, adultery, and those kind of sins destroy the person. Your self-respect goes right down the tubes. You may as well flush it. It's gone. And you don't recover very easily. We cannot let those standards fall. We must keep our standards high. Now, I know there's times where a person does everything they can and perhaps they would be raped or something like that, and that's a horrible thing to happen. But I do believe God will protect people who keep their standards high and who are careful. You don't go to a wild animal party. You don't go where people are snorting drugs and something. Some of these big orchestras that come into town here, you know, I mean, they're just, what are they, ecstasy places and all these things that they just, you know, drug it up and stuff. You shouldn't go near them. Besides that, if you've listened to, you know, I don't understand modern language. I don't listen at all, but, you know, every so often a bit of music comes on. I'm going to the gym. I'm running on the treadmill. You know, they play this horrendous music in the Club Fit. I don't know what it even is, but every so often I understand a word or two. And I'll tell you, the filthiest guy in the coal branch wouldn't use that language that they use over the airs and on the CDs that your children might be buying. Moms and dads, do you listen to what your children, you know, listen to? No, we need to guard our children. But sexual immorality is against yourself. You tear yourself down, your self-respect, your ability to move forward in your life, your big-eyed excitement for tomorrow is gone. Or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit? Wow. That's what makes this huge difference for us, that God grants His Holy Spirit, which is in you, whom you have from God, and you're not your own. But Daniel knew that. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego knew that God had directed them. They didn't have the Spirit of God in them in the sense that we understand that at that time. Perhaps later on that happened. But they knew that they had what they had was from God. And so we have choices. We have days like today, you know, where we have a Sabbath day. What do you teach your children? How much do you allow them on the Sabbath? Do you remind them it's holy time? It's God's Sabbath day? Now, there's things that we may need to do on the Sabbath. There's an ox in the ditch situation. There's good deeds, as Christ said. We're not Pharisaical, but we need to respect this day and do that which serves God in some way, and strive to be a part of that. Let's go to first to Isaiah chapter 18. This is a statement which God makes, which should be very encouraging to young people, because a young person has no ability to say who their parents will be, where they will live, what their economic situation is, or their income and so on. They don't know that. And sometimes young people are born into families where there isn't very much understanding or knowledge of the Scriptures. The standards are very low in some families. And so children, when their parents, the Bible says, eat sour grapes or they have a problem, it spills over to the children. If the parents have got all kinds of complicated problems within themselves, the children will suffer. That's a tragedy, but they will suffer. Isaiah chapter 18 is very encouraging. Verses 1 and 2 says, "Woe to the land shadowed with buzzing wings, which is beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, which sends ambassadors by sea, even in vessels of reed and water, saying, go swift messengers to a nation that is tall," and so on, "to a people terrible from the beginning onward, a nation powerful and treading down, whose land the rivers divide." Jumping down to verse 14. I'm in the wrong section. Just a moment here. I've got the wrong section, probably the wrong book. Maybe I want to have Ezekiel. I put down Isaiah in my notes here, and I'm going to have to either quickly flip to Ezekiel or back out completely. Let me just do that for you. It's funny how sometimes my fingers type too fast. Yes, this is Ezekiel is what I should have said. I've got Isaiah written down, though. I have to change that. Ezekiel 18. "The word of the Lord came to me, saying, what do you mean when you use this proverb concerning the land of Israel, which is, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Well, it means if the father, for example, is an alcoholic, children will suffer for it. If the father or mother, let's say mother's a spendthrift and she goes out and blows the money. You know, I knew a lady one time, she used to bet on the horses. It was incredible. You know, this was friends of ours, a couple. And she'd take the grocery money and go lose it at the racetrack. Then she'd go and borrow money from her mother to get through the month with the groceries in order to get some more grocery money to go to the racetrack again. It was astonishing to watch this woman in action. You know, absolutely astonishing. I don't know what her poor husband ever did. Poor, I say, because he always was. But she set her children's teeth on edge. But God says in verse 3, "As I live," this is a promise from God to all children, "you shall no longer use this proverb in Israel." In the kingdom of God, it'll never be that a child is born into a situation where they will never be able to learn God's standards, practice God's standards, and have a full, complete, wonderful life. It's not going to happen. And you and I will be there to make sure it doesn't happen. But we should be doing that now for our children, teaching them the standards. Yes, the time will come, they'll have to choose whether they want to follow those standards or not ultimately. But we make a mistake if we say to our children, well, when you're 18, you can decide. You can decide whether you go to the church or not. It's amazing when you think about that. How can we say that? How can we say after you're 18 you can decide whether you believe in God or not? How can we say that to children? We need to say to them, this is God's church. This is the truth. This is the way. I hope you never leave this way. It's a horrible mistake if you do. That's what we need to be saying to our children. You'll be making a terrible mistake if you leave. My heart bleeds for you in advance already, or whatever you want to say that may be dramatic. If you can write good poetry, you could really, you know, you could really do something there. Going down to verse 14, talking about individuals. "If he begets a son who sees all the sins which his father has done and considers but does not do likewise, And there are children like that, you know, who see what their dad has done or their parents have done and says, I'm not going to be like that. Who has not eaten on the mountains, nor lifted his eyes to the idols of the house of Israel, nor defiled his neighbor's wife. He's not oppressed anyone, nor withheld a pledge, nor robbed by violence, but has given his bread to the hungry. He's covered the naked with clothing, who's withdrawn his hand from the poor, and not received usury or increase, but has executed my judgments. It always comes back to executing my judgments, living by my standards, God says, and walked in my statutes. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Joseph, Jacob earlier, and others like that. He shall not die for the iniquity of his father. He shall surely live. That's God's intention and hope, but some children have a very difficult time, and they need support from the adult community. And our adult community doesn't give it to them. In our city, the support is fading so quickly. We can close by the words of Paul when he said, when I was a child, I thought as a child. And some of us still need to grow up even further. We do need to grow up mentally to be mature. We need to take the standards of Almighty God. They're not human standards. They're the standards that God has given. Not to grumble and complain and be a critic. Rather, be constructively, criticize constructively. Be somebody who builds. Somebody who puts things together. It's amazing. It takes a while to build something. You can destroy things in no time flat. Drive a tank through a building, it's gone. Takes you a long time maybe to build it. This is the book, the standard book, which we need to take and learn to live by. Paul says when he was a man, he put away childish things. And we need to do that. We need to make sure that we are spiritually mature. We need to think. We need to learn the options that God gives us and walk in them. Improve ourselves in every way, in our marriages, in our finances, in our living habits, in our understanding of the scriptures, in our fellowship, in our brotherhood. We need to work on improving that in the way we look at this world. God will not do it for you. He sets the standards. He wants us to reach for those standards. He loves those who are reaching. He loves those who love his standards. And once he sees that attitude and sees those people holding to those, then he will bless them. And so I'm very pleased with our young people. I have high hopes for them. I'm sure God has great joy and great happiness for those who determine to do what's right. And especially in the world that we live in today, that has to be pleasing to Almighty God. So let's us as adults make sure that we don't let our young people down. Make sure you as parents don't leave your young people down. Be an example to those of living by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God.